This is Images. I'm Fred Martino. Thanks for joining us. The Gila Natural History Symposium will be taking place this year from October 25th through the 27th. And I'm very pleased to have with us today Dr. Kathy Whiteman of Western New Mexico University. Dr. Whiteman, thanks so much for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
It's great to have you here. So you've been on the planning committee for the symposium. Tell me about it and the major issues that are going to be covered this year.
Well, we're really excited about the symposium this year. This is the, I believe it's the third biennial symposium. Maybe it's the fourth biennial symposium. It's been going on since 2005, and we're really excited. We've got talks on natural history, plants, animals, some fire talks. We'll have some field trips. We're just really excited about it.
Okay, sounds great. For folks who want to attend the symposium, tell me the mechanics of that, the details on how they can attend. And I know you do have a website because I was able to look at that and got some good information there.
We do. And really, for folks that are interested in checking out all that we have to offer, the best thing to do is to go directly to the website. That's gilasymposium.org. We'll have the schedule posted up there soon. We're asking that folks register, and that helps us so that we know how many people will be there. Registration is free, and we have Friday evening we're going to have a social. The cost is $5 a person, and that's what we need the registration for. We'll be selling T-shirts as well this year, so that's a new thing.
Okay. Lots of different presentations, which I was able to look at on the website as well. All different types of topics. Tell me about some of the things that you think folks ought to know about that if they come to the symposium, they'll be able to learn more about certain topics.
Well, we have a couple of talks about fire, and you know that's a big thing this year with all the fires that we've had. Going on in this area. Last year we had the Wallow Fire in Arizona, and this year we had the Baldy Fire right in the Gila, so that's kind of exciting. We've got talks about plants. We've got some really exciting science work going on with the liverwort and the bryophytes here in the Gila. We have restoration, some talks on restoration projects. I'm really excited that we have some talks on education that's been going on in this area and K-12 learning opportunities. We've got a lot of talks about fish and fish habitat, and that, again, is probably really closely related to some of the fire that's gone on this year. If you look at the website, we've just got tons of presentations. And we also, another thing that we have is a creative voices component of the symposium where folks are going to just come and talk less from a scientific point of view, but more making science, communicating science to the general public. And we're real excited about that.
Always important. Something we try to do on KRWG Radio as well, which is to do a lot of different environmental stories and science-related stories. And we always get good feedback on that. In fact, you mentioned that you have a number of different presentations on the situation with wildfires, which has been a huge issue over the last couple of years due to the drought. And we recently aired a feature on KRWG Radio about prescribed burns and the controversy over, is this a way to prevent wildfires? One of the major issues in many areas of the West. What are your thoughts on this and what you're seeing on this very issue?
Well, I'm not a fire ecologist, so this isn't really my area of expertise. I know a little bit, but it's not what I study. So, here in the Gila, we have one of the most progressive fire management programs in the nation. We use, the Gila National Forest uses prescribed fires to manage our forests. And what we saw this year in the Gila, it's my understanding that the fires burned with really high intensity in some locations, but for the most part, the fires burned with low to moderate intensity. And so, you know, I guess the proof is in the pudding. We'll see what happens. I don't really know what the outcome of that is going to be. You know, certainly when it started to rain, we had runoff, but our monsoons weren't that extreme this year. You know, the Wall of Fire last year, I know they've been using some prescribed burns over there. The fire was so big and so catastrophic, it didn't matter that prescribed burning was being used. The fire just burned through everything.
Okay. How are we recovering from the fires in the Gila?
Well, again, I'm not an expert on this. I'm not sure of all the details. I do know that the Forest Service and other folks involved in restoration did do a lot of aerial seeding. I think they seeded about 26,000 acres, and they spread mulch. That'll help with recovery, certainly. You know, it'll help to stabilize the soils. One of the things that happens after a fire, you know, when everything burns and the soils are scorched, that when it rains, runoff is tremendous, and it can make the rivers silty. You know, it kills fish, it buries frog habitats. It can cause a lot of problems, and so the restoration is really important to get on the ground really quickly to try to minimize impacts to the water resources.
So, of course, folks, you know, doing that aerial seeding, the hope is that with what little monsoon rains that we have had, it will cause some new growth to protect the soil, to keep it in place, so that when we do have heavier rains, we won't have these kind of devastating environmental effects.
Right. I don't know that it will be the perfect Band-Aid, that it will stop all sediment runoff, but the idea is that it will help. I know that the forest did a lot of channelizing with some of the riparian or watercourses right after the fire. Along the Gila River, they had big machines right in the river clearing out trees and doing some channelizing outside of the forest boundary. In some of the towns like Glenwood and Alma, where the fire was right there, they did some channelizing, and the hope, I think, was to any flooding that happened, to get the water out so that it didn't destroy homes and businesses. Like I said, we didn't see any of that really incredible rain that we sometimes get during our monsoons. So I'm not sure what the effect of the channelization did for the monsoon here in the fall. We'll see in the spring. Maybe we'll get a great snow melt and our flooding will be tremendous, and that will really make a difference.
Okay. Another issue that has come up certainly over the past couple of years, and it continues to be a major controversy, that is restricting access to public lands in order to protect the land and to protect endangered species. Your thoughts on this?
Well, that's kind of a touchy one. Public lands are our public lands, and I'm not a proponent of restricting access to places. But on the flip side of the coin, you know, we've got 7 billion people in the world. Everybody wants resources, and we all want a high standard of living. And when folks don't recognize the impact that they have in their immediate environment, they sometimes make bad decisions or decisions that don't have a positive effect on the land, and they might have a bad impact on plants and animals. And so maybe in some places restricting access is a good idea, but on public lands, that's a tough question.
And sometimes it means restricting motorized access, which is another aspect to this, that sometimes motorized vehicles can do damage. Not to mention, this is related to, as well, the wildfire issue, because we already know that some of the most devastating wildfires have been caused by humans through campfires, etc., fireworks. And this is not just a problem, by the way, In areas that are very rural, there have been incidents in the U.S. this year with the drought in very populated areas where folks have been setting off fireworks, and it has caused devastating fires, destroying, for instance, an entire Catholic church in Michigan.
Yeah. Well, you know, Fred, the point behind that that I guess I want to make is that's where education is so important. You know, here in the Southwest, I want to believe that most folks are wise to the danger of shooting fireworks off when it's so dry. But I know that's a generalization that's not really safe to make. You know, when folks can have the opportunity to learn how they interact again with their environment, it makes a difference. So back to your road comment though. Roads, I am against developing more roads especially in wilderness areas. Wilderness areas are wilderness. They're supposed to be set aside to preserve the wilderness feeling without human trammeling. So I don't want to see more roads in there. And, you know, roads and off-road vehicles cause a tremendous amount of damage to natural ecosystems. They increase erosion considerably. You know, they're noisy, for one. And when I'm out enjoying the wilderness, I don't want to hear a motorcycle or an ATV. I like the silence. I like to listen to the birds. That's a personal opinion, and, you know, everybody has one. So, but from a scientific point of view, off-road vehicles do a lot of damage in natural ecosystems.
Okay, very interesting information. You're going to be sharing some information as well at the Gila Natural History Symposium. You have a presentation entitled Impacts of Environmental Education Efforts on Fifth Grade Learning, the Membris Biodiversity Project. Tell me about that.
Well, thanks for asking about that. This is a project that I worked on when I was the executive director of the Gila Conservation Education Center. And now the Gila Conservation Education Center, or GCEC, is a really small local nonprofit that promotes natural resource conservation through education, example, and involvement. And the organization goes into K-12 classrooms primarily, does presentations, works with students to teach them about science and natural ecosystems. So it teaches about the environment, but not with an environmental agenda. The organization believes that when students learn about things, they can make their own decisions using science. So this particular project had some goals. We were funded by the New Mexico Department of Game and Fish for this project. And the goals were to foster student understanding of human impacts to landscape. We wanted to be able to demonstrate spatial and temporal variability in species distribution. So we wanted students to start to think about, you know, some species aren't present in some habitats at some times of the year. And, you know, as an adult, that makes a lot of sense. Things migrate, you know, you don't see butterflies in the middle of winter, but sometimes to children, that's not so obvious. We also wanted to help students recognize that species are dependent on particular habitats. You know, you're not going to find a fish up on top of a juniper tree. And the big overarching goal was to help promote positive stewardship behaviors. You know, once learning occurs, students often make changes to how they interact with things. So we worked with three different schools here in the Silver City area, and we went in the classroom and we did some pre-field trip activities with them. Then we took the kids out to the Nature Conservancy's Members Preserve, and we had them spend some time just exploring, and it was really great to watch them because they found all kinds of things that we didn't even notice. They found a deer skeleton, and they found scat and tracks and hair, and some of these kids had hardly spent any time outside, and it was really interesting to watch some of them blossom. They were so quiet at first, and by the end of the day, they were laughing and yelling. And, you know, data show that one of the most important things in adults having excellent stewardship practices is when they have a positive, youthful interactions with nature as kids. So just getting them outside is a really big deal.
I didn't realize that. That's very interesting. I certainly had that experience as a young person and have always been appreciative of the environment. And I wouldn't necessarily call myself an activist, but I've always been tried to protect the environment, and I've enjoyed, participating in recycling, those types of things. But I never connected that necessarily to experiences as a child being out in nature. But that makes very good sense.
Yeah, it's really interesting. There was a study, and I'm sorry, I can't tell where it was published. I can't tell you even who published it. But it came out pretty recently, I'm going to say within the last 5 years, where they looked at people who were involved in the sciences and in doing environmental sorts of work. And across the board, those people had really good experiences outdoors when they were kids. You know, and I don't know how old you are, but when I was a kid, I was tromping around outside, you know, getting muddy. I couldn't get, my folks couldn't get me to come in at night. I was poking around in everything. And
it's a good thing to talk about right now, because a lot of the kids today, instead, they're poking around on the computer, or on the tablet, or on the video game. I mean, they're not outside the way they used to be.
Right, right. And, I in my capacity here at Western New Mexico University, I'm really lucky. I'm also, I'm involved in the steering committee here, but I'm also the director of the new outdoor program. And I'm really excited about it, because our new president has a real vision for the university, and he's a real advocate for the outdoors. And so we want to get college-age kids outside, and not only will it have, hopefully, positive stewardship impacts on these young students, but it will help them develop leadership skills and confidence in who they are and what they can do. One of the things I think that's really important with this project is getting students to out into the Gila and starting to appreciate the 3.3 million acres of wilderness and natural ecosystems right in their backyard.
Absolutely. And folks will have a chance to do that as well during the symposium coming up October 25th through the 27th. Once again, Dr. Whiteman, for folks who do want to attend, where they can get the details, and I imagine there is, we talked earlier, there is a website.
There is. It's GILASymposium.org, and that's GILASYMPOSIUM.org. They can go, folks can go on the website. There's a registration form on the website. You can see the field trips that we've got, the presentations that are coming up. We have a silent auction as well. We have a link to things to do around Silver City. You know, we have a lot of trails here in Silver City that are public, and there's some really great, great outdoor activities to do. I forgot to mention that we also publish these proceedings, so all presentations have been published the last couple of years, and these will be published as well. So it's a really great thing to highlight all of the scientific research that's going on in this area. And I want to mention that the Gila is really one of the things that I'm so excited about with this symposium is the Gila is huge. It's the home to the world's first wilderness area, the Gila Wilderness. In the United States, in the continental United States, it's the third largest national forest. So, I think we forget that. We live in kind of a rural area, and we just take it for granted. Well, travel anywhere outside of this area, and you see that there are lots of people, and their, populations are increasing, and I was just up in Denver last week, and they have lots of notices everywhere about conserving water and saving water, and I heard people time and time again saying, "Oh, we're running out of water," and it was sort of alarming to me because I think of Denver as being right up there in the mountains and, wow, they're running out of water. But they're a little more progressive, perhaps, at promoting conservation. And I'd like to see us be progressive down here, even though we don't have huge human populations. We should conserve our natural resources because once we've I don't want to say mess them up, but can't think of a better way to put it. Once we've done enough to them, we don't restore things back to the way they were. It's not as easy as waving a wand and just fixing things. Ecosystems are complex.
Absolutely. And we can learn much more, once again, from October 25th through the 27th at the Gila Natural History Symposium. And it's gilasymposium.org, correct?
That's correct.
Very good. Dr. Kathy Whiteman of Western New Mexico University. Dr. Whiteman, thanks so much for joining us on Images.
Thanks for having me.